Someone once said there are only two types of people in the world. There are those who come into a room and they say, well, here I am. And then there are those who come into a room and say, ah, there you are. The Bible does not use this exact terminology, but it does clearly and forcefully demonstrate these two sentiments. In the scriptures, we read about two very different ways to live. In some Bible passages, we find people talking about and serving others. There are also Bible passages which talk about people who were devoted to serving themselves. Today we want to look at both of these ideas, but before we do that, we want to give some consideration to Jesus and how he lived his life. Was the Lord someone who came into the world and said, well, here I am, serve me? Or was the Lord more like the individual who would go into a room, go into a setting, see some people and say, ah, there you are, I want to serve you? There are a number of passages which might be used to examine how Jesus lived his life, but I'm simply going to draw from one. It's the information in John chapter 4, a well-known story. In the opening verses of John 4, we learn that Jesus was planning on taking a trip. In John 4, verse 3, the Bible tells us that the Lord needed to make a trip to Galilee. He was in the southern section of Israel, down there in the area of Judea, and he was needing to get to Galilee, that northern section of Israel. Those who traveled from Judea, the southern section of Israel, to Galilee, the northern section of Israel, had two choices. There were only two routes they could take. Route number one was the shortest route. It was, we might say, the most direct path. If someone in Judah decided to go to Galilee, that most direct route, it would take about 3 days. Now, this was probably the most practical way to go, but if you went the most direct route, you had to go through an area, you had to go through a section of Israel that was known as Samaria. Strict Jews did not like the Samaritans, so they were very hesitant. They typically did not want to have anything to do with Samaria. So for the strict Jews, rather than making that straight shot, that three-day trip, they would try to circumvent, they try to go around Samaria, even though that meant the trip was lengthened by 4 days. Instead of spending 3 days travel time, strict Jews often spent 7 travel days. Not only were 4 days added to their travel trips, but they also had to somehow cross the Jordan River. John tells us that Jesus took the shortest route, and he not only went through Samaria, he actually stopped there and spent a couple of days. We begin reading with John chapter 4, verse 4. And he, that's Jesus, must needs pass through Samaria. Jesus had a need to go through Samaria. That need is also expressed. It's also made known by the word must. That word means it's like a triangle. It must have three sides. It's required. It's absolutely essential. Now, as we continue to look at this story, we find that Jesus had to go to Samaria. There was a must. There was an obligation to go to Samaria because the Lord wanted to serve as a servant. So the Lord is making this trip. He gets finally into the area of Samaria. And he's there. Verse 6 tells us that he was exhausted. And Jacob's well was there, that is in Samaria. Jesus, therefore, being wearied with his journey, sat thus by the well. It was about the sixth hour. Jesus was deity in the flesh, but his human side is very clearly expressed at times, such as we see here. On this occasion, he's traveled for a while, and the Bible tells us that he's absolutely wiped out, completely whipped, exhausted. He asks, in that state of exhaustion, a woman for a drink of water. As the story continues, we find that Jesus engaged this woman in a very interesting conversation. We've already seen from verse 4 that it was necessary, it was required for Jesus to come to and through the area of Samaria. Why was it so imperative for the Lord to spend some time in this place? Well, certainly Jesus was not under obligation to come to this area so he could drink from a certain well. Jesus had a duty to come to this area because there were people like this woman who had a need. And Jesus was a servant. And he came to help this woman. As we continue to read this account, we then turn to the information in verse 10. Jesus answered and said unto her, if thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith to thee, give me to drink, thou wouldest asked of him, and he would have given thee living water. Jesus said, I've come to give you something. I've come to offer you the greatest gift in the world, salvation, this living water. As the Lord continued to speak, this lady, verse 19, concluded that he was a prophet. When we think about prophets, who were they? God's Old Testament prophets were servants. They communicated information to people, primarily the nation of Israel. They were God's helpers. Well, that's exactly what Jesus was doing on this occasion. He came to serve in a way that this woman understood. Then in verse 26, Jesus identified himself as the Messiah. As we move even deeper into the story, verse 40 says he stayed in this area for 2 days. Now remember, this was the area where strict Jews didn't want to be in. They would travel 4 extra days. They'd cross a river so they didn't have to spend time in Samaria. But Jesus knew there were people in this community, people in this region who needed help. So he said, I've got to go to this area. Not only do I have to go to this area, I need to spend 2 days there. And it was not 2 days of R&R. As we see from John 4, verse 41, his word was given there. He did some teaching. The Lord did not go to Samaria and say, well, I'm the Messiah. I've shown up. Serve me. Jesus came to serve the people in this area. The Lord initially helped a woman who, from what John says, did not live a well-more wife. Verse 18 says she'd gone through 5 husbands. How old was she? I don't know. She was old enough to carry some water, but not too old where she was unable to do this task. So was she in her 30s, 40s? I don't know. But she went through 5 guys. And Jesus said she was staying with someone else who was not her husband. As we read a little later in Matthew 20, and if you want to turn to the next reference, that would be a good place to go to. As we see from Matthew chapter 20, verse 28, Jesus said, I've come to serve, I've come to minister, and not have people serve me or not have people minister unto me. That is exactly right. Now we know from Matthew 20, verse 28, the Lord's choice when it came to servanthood. He said, I've come to serve. I've come to give my life for others. Well, as we look at our lives today, we're called on to make a choice. We're called on to live a life to have an attitude of where we can say, well, here am I. I'm here. I want people to serve me. I want people to wait on me. I want to be the one who's first. Or we can take the attitude that was mentioned earlier as well. Ah, there you are. I want to serve you. I want to help you. I want to aid you. I want to assist you in every possible way because I am a servant of others. The Bible lays out these choices in a number of passages and usually lays them out with pretty direct language. I mentioned Matthew 20, verse 28, but I did not state what precedes this information. What caused Jesus to say that he came to minister and not be ministered unto, Matthew 20, verse 28? Well, if you glance at the preceding verses, and we're going to read some of these verses, you see that Jesus was involved with a mother who had some adult children. This mom came to the Lord and made a very interesting request, and it was a request that Jesus refused to grant. We may have the idea sometimes that Jesus just gave people whatever they wanted. That's not true. There were some times where Jesus said to a person, no, you will not get what you're seeking. And here was one of those times. Matthew 20, verses 20 and 21. Then came to him the mother of the sons of Zebedee with her sons, worshiping him and asking a certain thing of him. And he said unto her, what wouldest thou? What do you want? She saith unto him, command that these my 2 sons may sit, one on thy right hand and one on the left, in thy kingdom. Now let's see if we can imagine what this mother asked of the Lord. Earthly kings had and still have great power and authority. If a person is sitting on the right or the left of a king, they have access to some significant power. So when this mother shows up and says, I want one son on your right, and I want another son to be seated on your left, she was asking the Lord for him to give her son some very lofty positions. Positions that would cause or result in other people actually serving her sons. After Jesus heard this information, he made this point in Matthew 20, verse 25. But there's a contrast. But Jesus called them unto him and said, ye know that the rulers of the Gentiles, they lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. The Lord was telling people in his day and time, look at our world. Our society is a time and place where people like power. Jesus said, as you look at our culture, there are people who want to have authority over others. We live in a time, Jesus said, where people want to be the boss. They want people to serve them instead of be servants. The Lord knew what his society was like. People wanted to be top dog in the first century. You know, today that's still true. When we look at our society, most people want to be served rather than be a servant. If you work in an office setting, think about maybe an office job that you've had or may have in the future, or you've heard about somebody having, a situation where the boss doesn't make the coffee. Boss likes coffee. He drinks coffee, but making the coffee is not his job. When the coffee pot is empty, well, that's so-and-so's job. The boss will not lower himself, if you will, to make a pot of coffee. There are some wealthy households where the homeowner says, that's the servant's work. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to lower myself. I'm not going to stoop to that particular position. Sometimes today people will look at a certain task or position and say, that's beneath me. I'm not going to lower myself and do that. People sometimes seek out vacations where they don't have to do anything. People will serve them, maybe hand and foot. Having someone serve us is often a sign of status and accomplishment. It makes people feel good and powerful. It's a source of great pride. The world's outlook at arriving at a place, a point in time where others serve us, that's an old, old idea. It's been around for more than 2,000 years. Jesus took this typical idea that we see in our society, this idea that's been around for so long, and he made this comment about it. Matthew 20, verse 26. He says, not so. He said, I know how the world works. And this is probably how the world is still going to be operating when he comes back. The people will still want to be served. But Jesus said, if you are one of my people, it is not this way with you. Not so shall it be among you. But whosoever would be great among you shall be your minister. I think this information probably shocked the apostles. I would say it still shocks a lot of people today. The Lord said when it comes to his people, they should not expect to be served by others. But that's sometimes what we find. There are cases where Christians believe that someone else, or maybe many people, should do their bidding. Jesus said that his people are to be servants instead of individuals who are served. If this wasn't clear enough, Jesus made the point again in verse 27. He said, and it's universal. He said, and whosoever would be first among you, that person shall be your servant. Rather than say, I am here, and expect people to serve us, to drop what they're doing so they can honor and aid us, the Bible tells us our attitude needs to be, ah, there you are. Let me come and serve you. Let me come and aid you. Is that not exactly what Jesus did in John chapter 4? He'd made that trip. He was weary, exhausted, sits down. He does ask for a drink, but that drink, that request, simply gets a conversation going. Even though he is absolutely whipped, he does his best to serve the spiritual needs of the woman that he met at that well. That's how we're to live. The Apostle Paul was a great servant. When the Apostle Paul opened the book of Romans, Romans chapter 1, verse 1, if you were to look at the Greek text, you would find that in the original language, the second word that occurs in the original language is servant. It literally says, Paul, servant, and then goes on from there. Our world likes to use all kinds of titles. I've heard people over the years boast or brag how they are the president of some club or the president of something else. Another person might say, well, I'm the treasurer of this organization. I've heard other people say, well, I'm the boss of this or that. How many business cards can we remember over the years seeing that said servant? I've not seen very many. I've seen a few, but not many. How many people, when they put out their resume, reflect the idea of a willing servant? Not many. One of the greatest servants of all time, the Apostle Paul, as he authors this public document, the book of Romans, the second word in the document is servant. This is my name, Paul. And this is what I do. I serve. When it comes to the role of a servant, the Apostle Paul took this task very, very seriously. As he continues to write in the book of Romans, he comes to Romans 1, verse 9. And here Paul said, I am not only a servant, but he said, there is a witness. There is someone who will offer proof or testimony about my service. And he said, that's God. God bears witness to the fact that my life is dedicated to service. And after he makes a statement, he says something else. Paul says, as I serve God, I serve him in spirit. That simply means that Paul's service to God, it was something that he offered willingly. It wasn't forced. It wasn't like God was holding a big stick over him and said, if you don't serve me, I'm going to beat you. No, Paul said, I wanted to serve. I did this of my own volition. Sometimes people today will serve, and maybe they'll serve very well, but they serve because they're forced into it. Think of the times in life when someone says, well, yes, I did go and help. And maybe I did a good job. I didn't want to do it, but nobody else would do it, and I helped anyway. No one else would take the job, so I accepted responsibility for it. Well, these and similar statements do not reflect the kind of service and servant attitude that God wants from his people. A person who is a true Christian is someone who serves and serves willingly and eagerly and repeatedly. Long ago, there was an Old Testament prophet who said, "Here am I, send me." A man who had a servant heart, and that was so important to God that he put that information in his word. Servants sometimes become involved with tasks that they enjoy. And sometimes servants are involved with tasks they do not enjoy. There are going to be some jobs in life that a servant of Christ is not going to find very pleasant. But when a person becomes a Christian, one of the things that they're saying with that decision is that my life is going to be a life of service. We, like Paul, pledge our life to another one, and that's Christ. And when we talk about our service to Christ, we mean by that that this is a commitment, and it is complete commitment. Sometimes people serve for a little while. They may be a good servant for a day, a week, a month, a year, maybe 5 years. But something happens, and their mindset of being a servant, it changes. Later in the book of Romans, and we're going to read these passages, Romans 12, verses 10 and 11, Paul once again picks up this idea of service. This was an important thing for Christians in the first century, especially for this congregation. And Romans 12 is filled with all kinds of short, practical statements. In Romans 12, 10, Paul said, "In love of the brethren, be tenderly affection one to another, in honor preferring one another." Well, that sounds a lot like saying, "I want to serve you instead of have you serve me." And that's what Paul was communicating to these Christians. Be a servant of Christ. Do not be someone who sits back and says, "Well, they need to serve me. They need to help me." Paul said, no. You be the one who steps forward and you function as a servant. And then in Romans 12, verse 11, Paul went on to say this, "In diligence, not slothful, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord." Instead of the attitude, "Here am I, serve me," Paul said the attitude is, "Ah, there you are. How may I serve you?" Some of us have seen slothful servant by those who should have been good servants. Imagine going to a restaurant for lunch this afternoon or maybe some point in the near future. And as we go into that restaurant, we're seated and we sit for 25 minutes waiting for a server. And as we wait, looking for the waitress to come see us, we find that she's sitting and she's chatting with a friend for nearly half an hour. She finally comes over to our table and she says, "Well, sorry about the delay. I'm going to bring you some menu soon." 15 minutes later, now we're 40 minutes into the restaurant visit, she returns with the items that we need to order our meal. She takes our order and says, "Well, I'm going to give this order to the chef after I finish my lunch break." She tells us that we might have our food within the next hour if the chef is in the mood to cook. Now, were that to happen, and I think that's very unlikely, most people would probably not stay past the 25 minutes, but were that to happen, if we were to have that kind of service, now we are getting service. It's slow, it's slothful, it's not good, but if we were to get that kind of service, would we ever go back? Would we recommend that restaurant to our friends? Our world, may I suggest, is disturbed and angered, greatly angered, by slothful servants. We don't like it. People get fired for slothful service. And God says to us, if we are a Christian, hey, you're a Christian. You are a servant. Not only are you a servant of me, but you are a servant really of all men. And in your service, do not be slothful. Romans 12, 11, that last verse that was read, it says, serve God and serve him enthusiastically. Well, is that not what we find in the Bible? John 4, with Jesus. It's what we find, is it not, in Matthew 25? Jesus said there were some hungry people, and his brethren, not slothful servants, fed them. He said there were some people who were thirsty, a simple thing, but his servants were not slothful. The faithful provided the needed drink and clothing and other things. Committed servants did what was necessary to be true servants. Are we a servant of Jesus Christ? Is our attitude, here am I, I want to go and serve. Here am I, God, use my life, let me be as productive as possible. Or is our life being lived in such a way where, here I am, serve me. Two very, very different choices. And two choices which lead to two very different places. May I suggest that we cannot serve Christ without being a Christian. Some people try, but we cannot serve Christ unless we are one of his people. And we become one of his people in the way that we've talked about many times before. Faith and repentance, confession and baptism. And after we take those steps, we cannot be a true Christian if we are not an active servant. Those two things. We cannot serve Christ without being a Christian. We cannot be a true Christian unless we are an active servant of Christ. Thus, are we a Christian? Have we taken the steps necessary to become a Christian? And in our daily Christian life, are we doing our best to truly serve others? Those are important questions. Those are life-altering questions. And those are going to be questions that help determine where we spend eternity. Today, if you're a Christian, but you have not been doing well when it comes to service in the past, it's time to change. And we'd like to encourage you to do that. If you're someone who's not yet a Christian, once again, it's time for change. And we'd like to take this morning, give you the opportunity to become a Christian, to be baptized into Christ, and start a life of service. Can we help you begin that life by conversion? Can we help you return to that life as a Christian? If these are needs that you have that we can help with, we encourage you to make that known now. If there's another need that you would like assistance with, that's also something that you can make known as we stand and sing the selected song.
With me abide. Sweetly the tongue.